Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is International Black Summit Talk Show Network coming to you every Sunday from 8 to 9 p.m. And we've got some interesting conversations for tonight. But as we normally do, let's start off with the Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There's nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991, September 16th, 2012, north, south, east, west, above, below, within, and around. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. Alrighty. So we have a caller out there, 603-300. Go ahead, you're live on the air. Caller. Okay. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, your mic is... Let's try that again. Okay, caller. 603-300. Go ahead, you're live on the air. Okay. Our caller's not responding. Wonder what that's about. Okay, well, we'll close off your mic. Sounds like you have a little background noise going on anyway. All right. I'll meet you. Okay, so one of the things, so the purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the black community and the world. So, what does that mean? That means that you have an opportunity to really work on your vision, to define your vision, get clarity around it, and then you can look for opportunities to bring that vision into being, make it actualize. As they say in one of the commercials, have your dreams come true. So, anyway, that's what it looks like tonight. So tonight we're going to be talking about a couple different things. We're going to be talking about politics. We just are coming off of the two conventions, the Republican and the Democratic convention, and it was the Democrats seemed to have a better convention, but of course, it's always better when your opponent goes first. it's a lot easier to kind of notice what they did and didn't do and then, you know, speak to it. So the Democrats certainly seem to be able to do that effectively. And I do think that that Mrs. Obama's speech matches matches Mitt Romney's wife's speech. They both were compelling and certainly spoke to the men. I think that you know, one of the things that was interesting was the president, the past president, President Clinton, former President Clinton's speech, and I think he actually took off the gloves and really started blowing some holes in some of the conversation that the Republicans had been putting forth, and Obama followed up with it nicely, but certainly, if I looked at it, good cop, bad cop, I would say that Clinton was the bad cop and allowed Clinton to be the good cop in terms of what was going on. And there's Henrietta.
Hello, everyone.
Coming to you live out of Henrietta Bird out of Chi-Town. And for those of you who don't know what that is, that's Chicago.
Good evening.
The windy city. The windy city.
Yeah.
And the temperature, I understand, has turned a little bit because you guys were having 80, 90 degree temperatures up until a couple of days ago, right?
Mm-hmm. But it's still 75, you know, which is really good for us.
Yeah, what we're averaging here in New York. So we normally get your weather about 2 days after you do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're enjoying that bit of calming, and hoping that we still get another resurge, so we get a little Indian summer before November when we're done. But last year we actually had a pretty mild winter, but we started October with a bang and got that snowstorm, and some of our folks up in New England really lost power. It was a devastating storm for them. So.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we're talking about the storm of politics and the conversations that are a brew, and I thought this week a very interesting phenomena was that Obama's cabinet, President Obama's cabinet, actually provided Mitt Romney with some briefings on world news.
Okay.
You know, because he's been making a couple faux pas in foreign policy. Which brings me to mind the other conversation that I thought was interesting was in his speech, the president let everybody know that he was the president.
two things also occurred this week that I thought were interesting. You know, like they say, there are no coincidences, but the 9/11 was this past week, and then the four gentlemen who worked in the embassy, their bodies were returned to the United States this
mm-hmm.
week, and President Obama, Secretary Clinton, they eulogized the gentleman. It was a very nice, you know, ceremony when they brought the, you know, their remains back. And it kind of had me present to the 9/11 situation. And then this happened, you know, like 2 days later, I think it was Thursday. Thursday, I think I saw that Thursday or Friday. I can't remember exactly what day it is. The days are going by so quickly. But President Obama's speech, Clinton, Secretary Clinton, she eulogized him first. And when she finished, she said, "Now I'd like to introduce a gentleman to you who came as soon as he heard about what happened to grieve with us at the State Department." And I didn't really know who she was talking about, but she was introducing the president because of the way she said it. But I thought it was very clever the way she said it. You know, she said, "This is a gentleman who came to grieve with us and has been with us all week." You know, once again to let people know of his, you know, his concern for the people in the military and the people who serve the country. I thought it was very clever the way she did it. You know. And then he did his part of the eulogy. So it was really interesting, to hear. You know, I thought about 4 years ago, there were all of these things that occurred in the month of September, right before the election. You know, and it seems as though those things are happening again. I heard, what's her name, Sarah Palin, make some ridiculous comments that I felt were ridiculous on one of those days. And so it's like one of the things that my daughter shared with me was she was in college 4 years ago, and her roommate was Republican. And what she said was that, you know, and they would always have nice, you know, very, very nice conversations about one or the other, you know. And after the election, I asked how, had she spoken with her, because by that time they had both moved to their own apartments. And she gave me the response. You know, she gave me her roommate's response, and the reason she got changed and wanted her vote to be counted, and decided to vote for Obama. And one of the reasons was that she had to have someone with intelligence. And it was very clear to her that the people who were running did not have a particular level of intelligence that she thought was required for the presidency, you know. So it's real interesting now, because once again you have another group, 4 years later, you have another group of young adults who have moved into voting age. And they look at things, they kind of look at the gray area. You know, we kind of look at things black and white. But they, you know, one thing I will give to the younger generations is they do look at the gray areas, and they think things through in a way that's very interesting to me, that I find very interesting, the things that they look at. Sometimes I would never think to, you know, like, think about those things, but they look at the details, you know. So it's interesting. And I just wanted to say, we have to make sure that whoever, you know, that people get out to vote, no matter who they vote for, just that they get out to vote. The younger people, to make sure that they vote. The people, the seniors, to make sure they have their IDs, so they can vote, because in some states you have to present your ID. One of the other things is to let people know that people who have been incarcerated and have completed their time and completed their probation convoked. And so,
I didn't know that.
And I actually found this out last Sunday when I was in New Jersey. And there were a lot of politicians at this gathering I was at. One of the people, you know, that was one of the points that she made. She said, and it varies from state to state, but in the state of New Jersey and New York, if you have completed your probation, you can vote. So she said, and a lot of people don't know that. So when I asked her certain points to bring out, because I think she's the president of the Women for Obama Committee or something to that effect. And she, you know, she was just telling me things that she would like for me to share on the, you know, on the radio program, and that was one of the points that she brought out. So, Glenn, back to you.
Well, you know, yeah, thank you, Manuela. You know, one of the things that when you talk about knowing the information, I've got to say that I was a very lazy voter, probably up until about 10 years ago. That's when I registered with the Republican Party because I was interested in finding out what they were going to do for me as a black man in America. Haven't seen a whole lot, I must say, and therefore haven't really voted along those party lines. However, it made me want to find out what the other guys were saying. And I must say that the internet has given me much, much more access than I've ever had to the political arena in terms of knowing what people will stand for. You know, I would say that I would vote on the presidential elections, but I really didn't know what was going on locally. And really didn't really care, because to me it seemed like they were all doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last 5 or 6 years or so, becoming part of a community development corporation here in St. Albans, I was tasked to work with the local politicians. So, you know, I really had to up my game and really find out and go through the I wouldn't say pecking order, but at least understand what the pecking order was and who was in it. But I must say that the information that we have available on the internet now is amazing, and it really, if you've got a computer, there's no reason why you shouldn't know what the issues are and what's going on.
Yeah, in communication, you know, it's interesting because the International Black Summit, one of our things is listening. You know, one of our major distinctions is authentic listening. And what I'm noticing, which is another distinction of the summit, is there's a difference in communication. It's like understanding what a person is saying when they're talking. And one of my experience is that there's a particular language that people speak that you understand and you're comfortable with and you can join into. And then there's a language where you just listen, and you listen and keep listening and keep listening because you don't get it. You know, you don't get it. So I think for both parties, Democrats and Republicans, the way we communicate is essential. You know, it's like really, really important so that we understand, you know, that the people who are really listening to make a decision which way to vote really get why they should vote one way or the other. And I think it's in our, you know, it's in our listening. It's like we talk about speaking into someone's listening, you know. And when you speak into someone's listening so that a person can make a decision about something, you know, it, I don't know, there's something about that, Glenn, that that I've been trying to I've really been trying to get, because there was a time that I thought I reacted to something politically, and I made a decision in that moment that I would not vote for this candidate because of what had been said, you know, like in a debate kind of situation. And I decided I'm not going to vote. I don't care. I have to vote the other way. I'll vote the other way, but I will not vote for this person because they're not to be trusted based on what they said in this debate. And so I sought out to hear what the other party was talking about. And I never could get it. I never heard it. And I mean, I like you talked about, you know, going online and reading, and I never got it. You know, so my take on it now, looking at it years later, is there's a specific listening, I guess, that each party speaks into, and you get it or you don't. You know, you get it or you don't. If somebody asked me, what do the Republicans stand for, what do the Democrats stand for, I don't know that I could really tell you, I could really respond to that. And, you know, young children ask that question all the time. Well, what's the difference? Why should we vote this way or why should we vote that way? And I think we should be able to tell them. You know, I think we should be able to explain to them. And I really don't know that I could do that right now. You know, so I might need to do some homework myself.
Well, you know, that's interesting. And caller, I'm going to get to you in a second. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we're having a conversation about the political arena, and the views expressed here tonight are not the views of the International Black Summit, but the views and the opinions of the individuals that are speaking. So I just want to get that clear and out in space with it, that we are not speaking for an International Black Summit, and the International Black Summit is a body of people who speak for themselves. However, the conversation tonight is just about the landscape and about some of the things that are going on. And you asked a specific question that I think that's worth a shot. Now, not that I'm a political expert of both parties, but one of the things that I'm clear about is that there are different what I can speak to are there are different economic plans. And the Democrats have a particular plan of balancing the budget via curtailing certain spending or the expansion of government spending, and but they're looking to not and tax cuts. I mean, that's the kind of economic game plan that they're looking to do. There's not a whole lot of conversation about how they plan to do that, but consistently what they do is they reduce the taxes of the rich, which I believe came out of Ronald Reagan, and they called it trickle down. And trickle down was the way that you give the folks at the top some leverage or tax breaks, and their spending would go into the corporate world, and then the corporate world would then create jobs, and then everybody, so the whole economy would be impacted by that. Now, when we look at it effectively, that's one of the aspects, and you know, and of course, there are different platforms and a lot of different things. So I'm just talking about the economic differences. There's certainly social differences. There are foreign policy differences. There are differences in terms of immigration laws. There are differences in terms of the outsourcing and what should be outsourced, and protectionism in terms of the being able to protect the industries inside of the U.S. So, I mean, so there's a lot of different platforms that you, if you were comparing the Republicans to the Democrats, that you can begin to look at, and you as a voter have to be conscious about which is important to you in those four or five areas that I've outlined, and then what's the best way to resolve that problem. So it's not so to say one is this way and one is that way, it's not a purist, and it's not always true, because you've got some Republicans that have some, you know, non-Republican issues inside or stance in terms of how they voted. So the water gets very murky, to say the least. So I don't know that there are clear lines that you can say one is this and the other is that, but they do form different kinds of policies and have put forth different kinds of policies. So that being said, I'm actually going to go to a caller that's got her hand in the air. And if you'd like to speak, press 1 and we'll get you recognized. We're going to caller 404-964. Go ahead. I believe that's...
Hi, everyone. This is Jill. How are you?
Hi, Jill.
Jill.
So, ma'am, Ethan, who has recently migrated from Atlanta to Connecticut on her way to Providence. Is that correct?
I'm actually back from Providence. I'm now in Connecticut.
I hear you. Well, welcome to the call.
Thank you. I was as I was listening, I was trying to find a website. I know a couple of people have asked me, you know, about the absentee ballot. On where should they go? People have been talking about the whole issue with the ID, and I believe I'm not sure the status of that now. I believe that's going to be coming out soon in regards to identification and voting. And I just wanted to know, has anyone heard anything in regards to number one, knowing what's a common website to go to find out whether or not you to find out where you need to vote, and any updates on the ID issue.
Well, I know in New York we would go to the Board of Elections. And there's a website that's associated with the Board of Elections, and inside of that will be all the rules and the requirements to vote. And I would assume that the states that have put in this new law that requires a state ID, a driver's license, to be the identification that you use at the voting booth would have that stated at their Board of Elections. And certainly anyone that's listening, if you're on the call and like and know the answer to that, please press 1 and we could certainly get you on so that you can speak to that specifically for your area.
I know in Chicago you can call the Board of Elections, you can go to the city's website. You can also dial 311 in some cities, and it's a non-emergency number that kind of directs you to different, you know, different places, different things. The ID regulation is a state-by-state decision, and some states have decided that you have to show ID. Others, you know, when I go vote, all I have to do is give them my name. They don't ask for ID. You know, I always have it with me, but I've never been asked for it. They probably will this time because it's a big issue. So they will probably, the judges will probably make them ask for it now or your voter's registration card. You know. And you have to be careful if you change your address lately. Your voter's registration card should go to your new address, but if it does not go to your new address, then you need to vote where you move from, in the area where you move from. And you have to be very careful about that because you'll go to the polls and your names won't be there. And so you have to go to wherever, to that area where you move from and vote there. Because you do have an ID, you do have your, you know, your address is on the ID, but you have to make sure that if you change your address, that you change your voter's registration address as well.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Yeah. So voting, the voting is becoming more complex. It is by design, I think, to dissuade some of the folks who've voted in the past, which is unfair. But again, you know, we have to be conscious of the kinds of laws that are being passed by our city and our state government. And one of the things that I heard Al Sharpton say, and I do believe that that's part of it, is when you look at some of the things that are going on, there's been an overall, I'm not going to say conflict, but a power source. And so there's state rights and there's national rights. And most of the rights around civil rights have been enforced and put in play by the federal government, not the state governments. So when you look at the whole integration and some of the other type of civil rights laws, they were enforced by the federal government, and the state governments were very reluctant. So it's interesting that the state is now looking to change the voting requirements, or to make it less, you know, the numbers less, to support the what I would say is the shifting in powers, and all of that is occurring inside of what the state legislation is actually doing. So it's very, very important for us to keep track of the smaller bills that are going on and what their true impact. You know, one of the things that I saw last election here in New York City which I thought was quite interesting, was there was a bundling of laws, and the bundling of the laws, of course, there were two or three in there that, of course, people were going to vote for, and then there were a couple others that were less meaningful or less understood that were included in that package. And, of course, that bundle of laws passed, which one of the things that I was a little upset about was that the community boards, which are the only local organizations that are out to protect the local community, were getting less funding and were being dismantled in terms of their power. And so, you know, you've got the city council, and you've got the mayor's office, and then you've got the agencies, and they basically edict what's going on, and the community boards were a way of at least having some voice, knowing some information in terms of what was coming out. And so it was very undermining that this was bundled, but that's how laws are passed. I mean, you know, we'll have the big law, and then there's a three or four other little minor stuff that kind of gets slipped in with it because you're trying to pass that that major law. So it's very important for us to know the facts and understand the overall game plan of what's occurring and how things are changing and how that's going to impact our family, our community, and certainly ourselves personally. So this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. We're talking tonight a little bit about, generalize about politics, but just understanding and knowing what some of the things that you need to know coming up with this election. It's going to be very important that all of us get out to vote. Again, we here are expressing our personal opinions, so we're not expressing the opinions of the International Black Summit, because the International Black Summit are individuals and are not a political organization, but are the individuals in it obviously have some political thoughts, and we're just expressing. So we're open to conversations tonight, and if you've heard something that you would like to add to or certainly don't agree with and would like to air that, please do so by pressing 1, and we'll recognize you and bring you onto the air. So anything else for you around that, Jill, that you were looking, anything specific? Any other specific, let's just say?
No. That was pretty much it. I was wondering, have any callers or have you all, prior to me coming on, discussed the whole Romney and foreign policy debacle?
Well, just very, very briefly in saying that Obama has Obama's cabinet, and I assume President Obama actually put it into play or authorized it, that the Mitt Romney camp would actually now have some briefings so that they would share some of the information with them so that they don't insert foot into mouth or impact negatively our foreign policy-making type decisions, especially when we're dealing with some critical things around the unrest which has happened across the world. So that's the only thing that we said. Anything that you'd like to add or you want to speak to or ask our listeners about?
No, just that the latest poll, I believe it was like in regards to both candidates and how the public feels about them in regards to foreign policy. It was like 50-something Obama and 37 Romney, and it's just I don't know how many people they polled, but it's just interesting to see. I'll just let everyone know I am in support of President Obama, and I will vote for him. And this was truly a time for Romney to really show everybody what he's made of. It was just, you know, almost like a perfect storm for him. And the commentators were saying, well, who's advising him? And I don't know how true this is, but he's really like taking on his, I heard he was taking on his own campaign. Like he's not really, when he's listening to people, like he's just doing what he feels he needs to do. And I was just concerned because it seems like all his foreign policy issues are just talking about not apologizing, but that's not, of course, a strategy, and it's just a sign of weakness to me. And I was just really surprised that he didn't take this and run with it. I mean, he could have really shown America what he's made of. And I guess, and for lack of a better word, he did. He did show what he's made of. And just hearing the commentators and people just really getting, just digging deep. I kind of feel bad for the guy, but I just feel like this was definitely his time to shine, and he didn't shine.
Well, you know, one of the things that we all are probably unaware of in terms of the amount of information that's actually being briefed to the president. I can't imagine, especially this past week with all the unrest. One of the things that I've been listening to Al Jazeera radio station and getting a little bit different perspective of what the normal, major news networks have been doing. And they were talking a little bit about how tough Obama has been in terms of his foreign policy and his eradication of the Al-Qaeda and the kinds of things that have been the terrorist threats that we've been having. He's been very forthright and forceful about eradicating them and has killed more of Al-Qaeda, as I understand, than anybody's done in the last decade. He's been very vigilant in terms of keeping our country safe and eradicating any threats to our country. The Mitt Romney and Ryan have been asserting that he hasn't been doing that, and that we need to have a stronger presence and so on and so forth, which is sort of is interesting because Obama's been doing the most out of any of the last few presidents. So, again, I think one of the conversations is perception, and I think it's very important that we listen to and understand what is perception, what is fact, and how we synthesize that, interpret that, and evaluate that as it relates to our voting pattern. We've got caller 314-381. Go ahead. You're live on the air.
Well, I was going to make a comment on the ambassador that got killed in Libya.
Yes.
And the outrage that we heard from Secretary of State Clinton and President Obama. But I think that the outrage is really discerning, being the fact that you know, you have, and I think that the ambassador apparently died of smoke asphyxiation.
Correct. That's correct.
From a fire that was set. And he was collateral damage, just like the collateral damage that happens when Obama authorized drone attacks and you have innocent women, children, and men killed. Then you had the no outrage when the rebels, which some of them was insurgents that had fought in Iraq against coalition forces against the United States, that the U.S. and her NATO posse had supported in their, you know, their overthrow of a sovereign government in Libya. Then when they were there, look how they tortured, killed, and maimed black African immigrant workers. Much of it's showing up on YouTube, and no outrage from the State Department. When Cynthia McKinney and Congressman Fauntleroy was there in Libya, and she was doing some interviewing, supposedly Hillary Clinton gave the order to eliminate Congressman Fauntleroy. So these things that we see and give, you know, it's kind of like tit for tat. Israel kills Iran's scientists, and, you know, not very much is said from the U.S. about this. This man had a family and loved ones and children, too. He was just working out his, you know, doing what he'd done. He'd done the same thing in Qatar, in her hotel. So who's right and who's wrong, if I may ask?
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't have an answer for any of that. I know that one of the things that we as voters have to look at and consider all of those things and consider what are the choices that we feel comfortable with, that we can live with. You know, and we've got to keep looking and keep digging and keep finding out for ourselves whatever that truth is. Because there is some truth out there, and, you know, one of the things that I have been very critical of is that I felt the media coverage has been insufficient on the major networks. And as I mentioned earlier, I've been listening to Al Jazeera, and that, you know, it's they come from a different perspective. They come from a more of a world perspective, which is interesting, which is what BBC has been for me when I watch BBC and compare it to. So, you know, again, will we know all the truth? Probably not. But we certainly can do the and ask the questions that we need to in order for us to make our decision in terms of who do we think is going to lead us. And it's not, and here's the thing, it's not just about the president, because the president is only a piece of that. You know, we've also got to look at who our U.S. Senators are. We've got to look at who our state representatives, state assembly, and who our local governors, government is as well. So, I mean, we've got to include it all in terms of how do we make a difference, how do we impact America going forward. You know, who's got the best interests going forward and who's going to make a difference and who's going to lay down and you know, be bought or not.
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, you know, I kind of like Ron Paul myself. He's been very consistent for the years that I've followed him. And he has a very straight approach. He says that we should stop meddling in other countries' business. All it does is cost money, and it's not for your safety and my safety. We talk about attacks. 9/11 could have just as well been, many say, was a red flag, just like many incidents that this country has staged where Americans was killed in order to get sentiment from the public, going all the way back to the, you know, the sinking of the Maine. There in Guantanamo Bay, and we wanted to blame Cuba. And that goes back, you know, back in the 1890s when the U.S. blew up a war ship in order to justify going to war against Spain. So these things go on and on and on. And, you know, you talk about 9/11, there's just too many. I mean, there's still questions about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because one of the things that there were, I actually saw a program called The Secrets of 9/11, and I'm not going to get into that one, but I wanted to say that even Pearl Harbor, you know, there's talk about that we allow that to happen so that we could get the outrage and get the people to get behind, you know, this war movement. Because, you know, so I mean, so there are a lot of things there. I think as Americans, the best thing that we can do is to keep opening up to questions and keep looking and keep searching for the answers. Because you're right, 9/11, there's a lot of questions as to what took place, the sequence of events, you know, the how the buildings came down. I mean, you know, we can go into a lot of quote unquote conspiracy theory conversations, but we as Americans have the responsibility, ethically, morally, to get out there and make a difference and vote.
I think Americans show a lot of apathy. You know, only half of the population, well, actually a third is going to vote anyway.
Yeah.
The other third is not going to vote. I mean, it's just most people are concerned about making a living, their employment. And that's terrible. I think one of the most pressing things for this country is also the debt. The country spends money, just it needs to stop. The military budget is way too, close to $700 billion. It should be around $200 billion, even if it's that much.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to see who has the guts to stop it. You know, at the end of this year, you got Reagan's 1982 borrowing from Social Security, $700 billion at 16% interest on a 30-year bond. Well, that bond is due December the 31st of this year for $2.5 trillion.
Yeah.
U.S. don't have that kind of money.
No. And we've got to do something about job creation, because you're right. You know, this is a key. You know, we haven't, from what I understand, we haven't had any manufacturing jobs created in this country. The only ones that were created most recently were around the auto industry. And prior to that, we haven't had an increase in manufacturing jobs. So, I mean, it's, you know, any significant increase. So, I mean, we have got to turn around. And again, we cannot wait for public officials to do it for us. You know, one of the things that we talk about at the International Black Summit is about self-generation. And it's going to take each and every one of us. Voting is one aspect of it, but it's also going to be following up and doing what we can do in our communities to impact that.
Well, you know, blacks in the South, they need not even vote for the president because the South is not going to go back Democrat. Even in Mississippi, what blacks make up, what, 35-37% of the population, they're not going to, that vote's not going to influence the presidential race. I think more blacks should move to the South and occupy a couple of those states where they can get their numbers up around 60%. And that way they would be able to have more economic impact rather than trying to show some loyalty by going to the polls. Our business history, our business, our present business stats is really sad. You can't control politics unless you got good business. You can't, people can't be taking $5 and $10 out of their pockets. That ain't gonna do it. You have to have businesses support politics, and you get the best politics for what your money buy. Blacks got 87% of their businesses gross less than $50,000. Last survey by the U.S. Census reported that blacks had 1.9 million businesses, whereas less than a million of those businesses employ anyone.
Right.
So that's very sad.
Absolutely.
Mississippi, look at Mississippi. Blacks are a majority population in 18 counties. But what do they control that they consume in those counties? What do they produce, manufacture, that they need for sustenance in those counties? Those large mega population centers where African Americans now reside are markets. Markets, mm-hmm. unfortunately, that other immigrants in there are taking advantage of.
Taking advantage of and developing their businesses in there. Yeah,
and taking the money out.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things that we talk about at Farmers Boulevard Community Development. You know, how do you impact your community and bring money into your community rather than allow it to filter out? But
I think you're gonna have to do just like other people. You're gonna have to manufacture someplace where labor is affordable, where climate, there is all the cost to manufacture that product is cheaper than what it's costing in Korea. Korea has a higher net median income than, you know, Americans.
Americans, too. Yeah. First,
yeah. China is increasing, and you got the shipping on it. So blacks could be, you could have black groups that's manufactured and producing in West Africa using the trade agreements, African Growth and Opportunity Act, to bring those goods back into the country, duty and tariffs free, and ask for more if that's not enough.
Yeah,
have your
absolutely.
Own name, brands, labels. So, all these things. But then you can put your own people back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Those school lunches. Look at those school lunches.
That's right.
Where did that food come from? That's France and Aramac. Sodexo and Aramac, French companies, and the U.K. company that's controlled that.
Aramac, right. Aramac French, yes. Absolutely. Well, we've got about a minute and a half left, and we've been having a great conversation tonight around, you know, being politically aware, being aware of what the issues are, being aware of what you're up against in the conversation. Certainly, this last conversation about economic, I'm going to call it economic prowess, understanding what's going on economically, what needs to be done in your communities to move yourself forward, and organizing ourselves, organizing our inside of our community to impact our businesses. Because that's how you get jobs. You create businesses that employ the local people. You know, every other community is taking that on, and it's time for us to take that on if we're going to take back the economics of our cities and our communities. Absolutely.
Well, Glenn, I just wanted to let people know who are interested that the Chicago teachers decided to continue the strike into the second week.
Oh, great.
And just that bit of information. And it's real interesting reading. And you can just Google, you know, did the Chicago Teachers Union settle the strike, and they go into detail about it. So it's it's interesting because the mayor is threatening to get a court order to make them go back to work. It's real interesting reading. So if you get a chance to take a look at it, but they are they're striking for more than money. They're striking for conditions and just having so many children in one classroom, and it's a lot of interesting things that they're striking about. But they have decided to continue into the second week.
In the long run,
they're gonna lose out on that. You know, so it's just, I wonder why come Chicago is continuing to maintain the population that it's done, because in most big cities, the population is on drop where they close in schools. They close like 45 schools in Philadelphia. In St. Louis, they close about 30.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do here, close a large number of schools. I'm not sure of the exact number, but that's what they're trying to do here. And they're forcing the charter schools, because the charter schools, non-union positions, you don't have to be in the union, so they have more control over them, over the teachers that way. So,
I'm going to tell you something. I've been following school education as it applies to black children for going back to the 1970s with Bedford Stuy there in New York, and I don't know if either one of you are teachers or not. But the teachers union has been a menace to black concerns. When black parents and groups wanted to change the direction that their children was being taught, those teachers unions have came out and fought that with viciously. And what they do, teachers pay dues. Those dues are used at the local level to pass to the state. At the state level, they are used to finance your state politicians.
Yeah.
In other words, you voting for them, and they're doing the wishes of the teachers union. At the national level, they do the same thing with your Congress people. So they have been a total nemesis. Now, there needs to be alternative education. I mean, there need to be vouchers. You need to have good charter schools. You need to have good public schools. But you have to have alternative education, because public schools have not done it, and they can't do it.
Well, I'd love to continue this conversation, but we're actually out of time.
Maybe we'll talk about this next time.
Absolutely. Let's pick up that conversation, because education is, again, one of the key factors when you look at the economics of our community. And if we're not educating our young people, they can't get the jobs and can't do the things that we need them to do.
That's right.
To move on. So,
all right. Thank you very much.
With that tonight, have a wonderful week. We'll come back next week. Same bat channel, 8 to 9, and the call-in number is 646-716-9827, and we also have a web connection, and our website is www.blacksummit.org. Good night, God bless, and let's continue these conversations, because they're very useful.
Thanks, Glenn. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.